I guess the sounds of birds and the smell of azaleas for those who are all in on the Masters.
And then the pollen right in your eyeball, or maybe that's just me.
No, that's me too, trust me. Dennis Cox sitting in for Adam Gold. This is the Adam Gold Show. Victoria Vodnecker producing us as always. It is Masters weekend, which means we are obligated to mention golf here at some point. I will be also legally obligated to mention soccer.
Yeah.
This might be fulfilling those contractual duties because this is the Adam Gold Show. I have to do these things. We will actually talk to head coach Rob Brindamore of the Carolina Hurricanes coming up in about 45 minutes. So make sure you do stay tuned into that because the Canes, game 80 of the regular season tonight. Game number 80 on the road in St. Louis. It's an 8 o'clock puck drop here in the old Eastern time zone. But nonetheless, the Masters is taking place, Victoria. And I'm not going to lie, I don't get jazzed up for the Masters like a lot of people do. Granted, I'm also not like the biggest golf nerd in the world. I know Adam loves golf. Our friend Tim Donnelly, who hosts the Drive on 99.9 The Fan here in Raleigh, which is our flagship station for the Adam Gold Show. He's a huge golf guy as well. Right. I know a lot of people that listen love to play golf and stuff. It's just not my cup of tea.
No, and Adam and I have talked about this recently because he's all jazzed about it, and that's great for him. But, you know, for me, that's not really what I stick to. Like, this weekend, for me, it's all about violence.
You have UFC 300 this weekend. Exactly. You have so that. Excited. Me, I'm deep in the college lacrosse season.
Yeah.
Like, in the NFL draft and stuff that's coming up. You can only have so much bandwidth. But you know what? That's the beauty about sports.
You know what does make it more interesting, though?
What's that?
I do have maybe a golf bet. And it was a total shot in the dark, too. But it's a golf bet, so it keeps me invested.
I took one as well. Look, I'm not, like, golf illiterate when it comes to, like, who guys are and things like that, because working in this industry, you kind of have to be. Me, I picked Jordan Spieth.
Yeah.
He's won the Masters in the past.
Not a bad pick.
We'll see.
Yeah. I know a lot of people are going with Scheffler, which also...
A lot of people are, which makes sense because he's... Right there, one back of Bryson DeChambeau and Max Homa right now at 700. Well, let's, you know what? Let's go and get things started. We'll go right into the Masters. Let's get it started in here. Let's get it started. Also, by the way, my good friend Chris Lee coming up at 2:30 today. He's going to join me in studio. We're going to do a little Panthers playbook for you, talking a little Carolina Panthers for you. But yes, the Masters is taking place. A lot of people know what's Tiger doing. Tiger's plus one through six holes of the second round. Right now, he's in line to make the cut, which for a lot of people is awesome because people want to see the red shirt on Sundays.
I know. They were worried about him.
They really want that, which it's understandably so. You know, he's still only six holes in. A lot could happen. He could, never know, he could birdie three more holes. Yeah. He's at minus two, and he's all safe and good to go. He could also hit a couple into the water, and then all of a sudden, he's like plus five.
Yeah.
And then like, well, there goes the weekend.
Yeah, we're done.
But that's what it is. So for a lot of golfers, because of the weather delays yesterday, a lot of guys, including Tiger Woods, had to finish their first round actually early this morning. So Tiger Woods finished the first round at plus one and was right back on the course because he had to finish five holes this morning. And then about 40, 45 minutes later, right back out on the course to play your next 18. I'm not sure if that's an advantage or not for guys. You know, to get a few holes in on the course early, just kind of see how the course is playing early in the morning, kind of get that out of the way. Then you go play your next round. So I'm not entirely sure. I think it's really up to the individual mentally how you handle it because you can say, well, one, it's a longer day and it's a fast turnaround. But the counter is, again, you've got warmed up and you have a feel for the course before you start your second round. But also, do you also feel like you're trying to catch those leaders? Like when you haven't finished your first round and you are on Friday on the course and you look at the leaderboard and you see Bryson DeChambeau's at 7-under, you're like, I got to make up ground today.
Yeah, extra
and you
pressure.
And you start doing that in those, you know, the end of your first round and you might, you know, shank a shot or something like that or maybe get too aggressive trying to go for the green or something along those lines or with your ball placement. A lot of those things, again, I think it's all individually on how guys handle it. But nonetheless, Max Homa right now, who's already into a second round, actually had to finish his first round earlier today. He's 7-under. Bryson DeChambeau is 7-under. A lot of guys are, I mean, Bryson DeChambeau, I think he literally just took the course about 10 minutes ago from where it is right now. So there are guys, again, that finished their first round this morning, and then, like Tiger, 45 minutes later, back onto the course. So it's just a little it's a little bit of a weird day, to say the least. But as far as I know, the weather's going to be great over the weekend. Cool.
You know, Paul was filling in yesterday, and I'm sticking to this. If Bryson DeChambeau doesn't, if this golf thing doesn't work out for him, he should totally make a wine. I feel like his last name is a total wine, like, company.
It's DeChambeau.
The DeChambeau. Like, I don't know.
So. Sounds like a rosé.
I know, right? Pinkies out, everything.
Pinkies out for Victoria. As she sips rosé.
The DeChambeau.
The DeChambeau. That's just no further comment on that. But the Masters is taking place. I know a lot of people get jazzed up for the Masters. That's great. That's fun. That's good for you. I hope you enjoy it. I really do. It's, again, it's not something I really get into. I pay more attention to it than I do just a normal PGA event because it is a major.
Yeah.
I do pay more attention to it, but all right, people get psyched up. That's okay.
I kind of like the end. I'm growing to where I like the end of it because that's when the suspense really builds. Like, okay, they got to make a hole in one here. Or they, you know, got to do whatever.
Like, you know what? Like, someone is on the course and they're one back and then the same pairing. So that really actually impacts exactly what you're doing. When you get those kinds of situations, I'll lock in a little bit more, for sure. I'm definitely going to be in on that. But Bryson DeChambeau was set to tee off at 11:54, so I think he's, again, just getting out of the course. Scottie Scheffler, who's one back at 6-under, doesn't tee off until 1:48. Is this scheduled tee time? But again, I think some of that may got pushed back because guys finishing the rounds this morning. But if you enjoy the Masters,
yeah, it's your time.
Open the windows up, smell the pollen.
Close the windows.
Then close the windows.
Because it's going to get all in your house.
All right, next up. Trust me, I'm fighting the pollen and stuff myself.
Like in my eyes and everything.
So this news broke about an hour ago, I'd say. Jarrett McCain, shooting guard for Duke, announced that he's going pro. He announced it on his social media. So people were like, sources, source him. Is Jarrett McCain himself. This is of no shock to me that Jarrett McCain going to the NBA. Projected by many of the quote-unquote experts, the draft guys for the NBA, to be drafted in the first round. Some people have him going in the 20s. Some people maybe have him going like 18 or 19, just kind of depending on how the draft board falls out. And then there's obviously like the NBA is so weird with like, oh, well, this pick's this protected and, you know, we could do pick swaps and all that kind of stuff. But nonetheless, he's projected to be a first-round draft pick pretty solidly with that. Go for it. Your first-round pick coming after your freshman year of college, go for it. It's guaranteed money right there. Now, I'm sure if he came back to Duke with name, image, and likeness, the guy would make a bucket of money.
Yeah.
Or buckets of money. That's a guaranteed contract in the NBA. And that's future long-term money that you can get. So you know what? I don't blame the guy for going. My guess, in the next few days, maybe even today possibly, we'll hear Kyle Filipowski announce his intentions on going to the NBA draft. I'm sure we'll hear that in the near future. That's just my anticipation. I don't have any inside information on that. But
just an instinct.
Well, the guy's been projected to be a lottery pick, you know, somewhere in like 10 to 13, 14 range in the NBA draft like the last 2 years. Kind of hard to turn down that money again.
Yeah, it would be.
Kind of hard to turn down that money again. So I anticipate Kyle Filipowski. We'll hear that announcement sometime in the very near future. But one person of note when it comes to Duke basketball that's coming back, it's Tyrese Proctor. He's going to be a junior next season, also a guard. This is massive for John Shire and Duke program, in my opinion, because there is a case where Shire could lose his whole starting five.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing. We've heard Mark Mitchell's going into the transfer portal, Jeremy McCain going into the NBA. Jeremy Roach even flirted with the possibility of going to the NBA after last season. Now, he still has a year of eligibility left. What does he decide to do with that fifth year? Does he go pro? Does he come back to Duke? Does he go to the transfer portal? The young man has a lot of different options. If he stays at Duke, he can make a lot of money with name, image, and likeness. That's always something that could potentially keep him around. He can go to another program if he wants to. And I'm sure he can make a lot of money doing that as well. I don't know what his NBA prospects are just because he's played 4 years of college and generally the NBA doesn't like, quote unquote, older guys. It's a weird thing, but it is what it is. But also, if Tyrese Proctor had decided to go pro or transfer, there's a lot of possibility of him actually going to the NBA after last season because a lot of people projected him to be a first-round pick. Had a bit of a down season, dealt with the ankle sprain and injury and such. So some up-and-down play for Tyrese Proctor this year. But you're looking at a possibility of your starting five gone?
I know.
For Duke?
Starting from scratch?
Yeah.
What a rebuild.
A lot of young guys coming in. But if Roach returns, again, no inside information, just going off my instinct. Jeremy Roach returns. You already know that Tyrese Proctor announced that he's coming back to Duke. And assuming Caleb Foster also returns, just finished his freshman year, had a stress fracture in his ankle, missed the last several games of the season, including the NCAA tournament. Assuming those three guys, all guys in the backcourt, all return, that's a lot of experience that's much needed for a team that has a big-time recruiting class coming in where they can shepherd in the youth, right? Because you still have guys that were just finished their freshman year that didn't get a lot of playing time. I'm talking guys like Sean Stewart, TJ Power. These guys were five-star recruits, and you're bringing in the number one recruiting class in the country. You got to have some experience on the floor with them. And if you could have two guys in your backcourt with Roach and Proctor, who are going to be three-plus years in your program, three-plus years of competitive college basketball experience, not just 3 years of, like, just getting, like, 5-6 minutes a game, like, actual starter minutes that played in the NCAA tournament, that have played in big games. Jeremy Roach played in the NCAA Final Four just a couple years ago.
Yeah.
The team that had Paolo Banchero and some of those guys. That experience is going to matter, because my biggest thing for Duke this past season was they were just younger than everyone else. It's not like they weren't talented, but North Carolina had an older team. NC State had an older team. Yeah. Duke had a lot of freshmen and sophomores this past season.
Continuity.
They were super young.
Yeah, continuity and, you know, experience is valuable.
It's experience, but it's also experience within the program. The way John Shire is building his team, we're going to get more into this at about 1:15 today. But one thing that John Shire is doing, the way that he is building his team, he's building it through recruiting and building from within. He's not like what NC State has done, which is transfer portal U. Like, which is the complete opposite, basically. And also, you look at what North Carolina has done, which is basically like a blend of the two, where you have your homegrown talent, you're supplementing through the transfer portal. The way John Shire is doing it, it's all grown from within. He's doing the quote-unquote, it's weird to say, the old-school way, the way teams used to do it, I don't know, like 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way he's building his team. But to have Proctor come back is massive. If Roach comes back, too, now you have an experienced backcourt to go with all those wing players that they're bringing in, including Cooper Flagg, who's the number one recruit in the country and already projected to be the number one pick in next year's draft in 2025. But you got to have some level of experience to teach these guys not only what to do on the court in college basketball, but also just, again, the culture of your team. Where to go in practice. Hey, this is the drill we're doing, young man. Go over here.
Mm-hmm.
Those kinds of things, absolutely matter. All right, next up. As I mentioned a little bit ago, the Carolina Hurricanes are in action tonight. In about a half hour, we're going to talk to head coach Rob Brindamore. Game 80 for the Carolina Hurricanes. They're on the road at St. Louis, taking on the Blues. Then this Sunday, they're at Chicago. Then on Tuesday next week, they're at Columbus to close out the regular season. So this is part of a four-game stretch on the road for the Canes to close out the year before they come back home to PNC Arena for round one of the NHL playoffs.
Yes!
Who they're playing? To be determined.
Yep.
Where they're going to be seated? Also to be determined. There's still a lot to be gained for the Carolina Hurricanes in terms of these last few games of the regular season. Look at the standings. The New York Rangers lost yesterday to the New York Islanders. Islanders needed that win desperately because they're
big
trying
time
to make the playoffs.
Scrapping.
Rangers, they've been locked in. But the New York Rangers have the top spot in the Metropolitan Division. By the Rangers losing yesterday, a win by Carolina today, by any means necessary, whether it's win in regulation,
mm-hmm,
you win in overtime, shootout, whatever it is, you get 2 points. You're now within 1 point of the New York Rangers for the top spot in the Metropolitan Division.
It's big.
It's massive. Because if you win in the first round of the playoffs, and so do the New York Rangers, guess who you play in the second round of the playoffs? The New York Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
I'd much rather have home ice advantage.
Same.
Now, granted, it's also been proven in the NHL that home ice advantage
doesn't
means
matter.
Diggity squat.
Yeah, it's just nice. We like to cheer
but
our games
on. But we like
on
to have that. You know, we want to. If there is a game seven, you want to have it at home.
Yes.
Just don't get to a game seven.
Right,
win it in six, just to, you know, keep
I know,
it close.
And
you know,
don't do this triple overtime thing again. Like
it was four overtimes.
Yeah,
that was different.
To like 2 o'clock in the morning. Wolf. Oh man,
later than that. Yeah. But nonetheless, Carolina could get within 1 point of the New York Rangers tonight with a win. But also, they keep pace ahead of the Boston Bruins for the second best record in the Eastern Conference. Why does that matter? Well, if the Boston Bruins get to the Eastern Conference Finals, as do the Carolina Hurricanes, by having more points in the standings than them, you get home ice advantage in the Eastern Conference Finals, even though you might not have it in the second round, depending on where the New York Rangers finish. So, yes, there are things at stake in these games
still
coming
perks.
Up. So there's still much for the Canes as a team to gain, but there are still a lot of teams a lot of things for the Canes as a team to figure out. But again, both individually and as a team. As a team, they still got to figure out who's playing with who. We already know that Andrei Svechnikov has been hot lately. And I think they're going to settle in on Jordan Staal and Jordan Martinook and Andrei Svechnikov as a line. We know that Sebastian Aho, Jake Guentzel, and Seth Jarvis, that's the top line.
Yeah.
Nonetheless,
done.
Right now. Don't mess up
don't
something that's great.
Don't even sneeze
don't
at it.
Touch it. But it's everyone else. You're still trying to figure out, all right, who's Evgeny Kuznetsov? Who's going to play alongside him? That's going to dictate a lot of different things. Because as of right now, Svechnikov, let's look at Svech individually right now. The past two games, he's looked like the Andrei Svechnikov that the Carolina Hurricanes need. A consistent scoring threat that's physical, wins battles along the boards, and most importantly, staying out of the penalty box.
Yes.
Most importantly, staying out of the penalty box. Now, Rod Brind'Amour talked about how Svech and his injuries that he's had and just the bounce back that he's had. Here's head coach Rod Brind'Amour on how impressive Svech has been since returning from those injuries.
We all know the type of players because we get to watch them every night. And so there's a high standard, right? You expect that every night. Not those goals, but the impact, and because that's the kind of player he is, and we all know that he's capable of. So it's good to see the last couple games, certainly.
It's been awesome to see because, again, that's the Andrei Svechnikov that this Carolina Hurricanes team needs to have. Now, another player that my mind is on for the Canes, Evgeny Kuznetsov. He'll be playing in his 18th game with the Canes tonight. The first three games with Carolina. Now, granted, he didn't play for a stretch of several days for various off-ice reasons. But the first three games with Carolina didn't produce any points to be expected. You're figuring things out. New team, new environment. Totally get it. Then he has a four-game point streak where he scores two goals and has three assists during that four-game point streak. In the 10 games since, zero goals, two assists, minus two while averaging just over 14 and a half minutes of ice time per game. If Kuznetsov is going to be this team's number two center and skate on the power play, he needs to be a consistent threat on the ice. Now, he doesn't have to be 5 points every four games unless you're going to do it, but he needs to guide a line where he's creating chances for Martin Natchez, Teuvo Teravainen, which is who he's been skating with. Because when Carolina has scoring threats throughout the lineup, that's when they're most dangerous. We saw it against Boston the other day. We saw Guentzel and Jarvis both score. Now, Jarvis's goal came on shorthanded situation. But nonetheless, that line scored at even strength. We saw Svechnikov score. That line scored at even strength. Then we also saw Teuvo Teravainen score. If they can have consistent scoring throughout the lineup, that's when Carolina is most dangerous. It can't all fall on the top line of just Aho, Guentzel, and Jarvis to be the goal scorers. And then hopefully that you get enough power play opportunities where you can go 1-for-4.
Yeah.
It has to be throughout the lineup. And Kuznetsov was brought in to be that. You're brought in to be the number two center. You have to be a consistent threat offensively. Because right now, this has been his knack throughout his entire career. Defensively, isn't great. If you're not producing offensively, then you start to become a defensive liability. That's when things can get tough for Carolina come the playoffs. All right, final thing. 2 weeks to the NFL draft.
What? That's crazy.
Now, 2 weeks for the Carolina Panthers NFL draft. 13 days for everyone else, or most everyone else, I should say. Because Carolina doesn't draft until this day two of the draft, the second round. They have the 33rd pick, which I'm sure a lot of you have already heard. They also have the 39th pick. They also have a third round pick as well. Okay, a lot of people have heard that. That's totally fine. But Dan Morgan still has some things he has to figure out. He and Dave Canales in terms of what they've done. Now, overall, this offseason, I will say this. I've liked it so far.
Yeah.
overall, like, I'll probably, if I had to give it a grade, I'd give it a solid B. Maybe even push to a B plus. I love the offensive line signings. The Deontay Johnson trade was awesome.
Yes, that was a good one.
The long-term deal for Derrick Brown, great. Like, good you with locked that. It up. Totally good with that as well. But there are still a lot of holes to be filled, upgrades and needs. Now, Dan Morgan and Dave Canales, you're not going to fix everything in one offseason after a 2-15 year when there's a lot of needs. You're not going to fix it all in one offseason. I have to remind myself of that. And for you, if you're a Panthers fan, I got to remind you of that, too.
Yes.
It ain't all going to get fixed right away.
No.
It's just not.
But I think we've said this many times. If we just see progression.
Progression.
That's it.
Progression. But there are still two positions that I think are on the high need of player upgrade. One on each side of the ball. Offensively, I'll start there first. Now, I still think that they need another wide receiver. You might even see him draft a running back. Obviously, the offensive line upgrades. I still think they might need a center to develop. But nonetheless, tight end? Anybody? Hello?
Yes.
Hayden Hurst did not work out last season.
No. That's
right now, you're rolling with Tommy Tremble and Ian Thomas. Yep. Now, Tommy Tremble, I think, is okay. I think he's a good number two tight end. He's still young. I think he's just, 23 years old, about to turn 24. Still pretty young.
Room to grow.
Ian Thomas, not much more than a blocker and a special teams guy. That's really about it. And I've seen a lot of Panthers fans are very high on Jatavion Sanders, the tight end out of Texas, who's like freak athlete, caught 54 passes in 2022 for Texas. Now, once you have Brock Bowers, who's like the number one wide receiver, or not wide receiver, tight end, might as well be a wide receiver, but the number one tight end in this draft, there's like a steep decline. Basically, you might be able to get a guy like Sanders in the third round, even the fourth, which, okay, great. You still need massive upgrades at that position because if you look at all the top offenses or most of the top offenses in the NFL have a really difference maker at tight end.
Yes.
They have a difference maker at that position. Just look at the teams that have played in the Super Bowl the last several years. I was talking with our good friend Tim Donnelly about this. He's like, yeah, you've seen a lot of George Kittles. You've seen a lot of Travis Kelce's. You've seen Zach Ertz in his prime. You've seen Dallas Goedert, like, when they're healthy. Like,
yeah, and with Carolina, makers. When the Panthers were at our prime,
yeah,
we had Greg Olsen.
Yeah,
so
even when Cam Newton came in, he had Greg Olsen and Jeremy Shockey. Like, it's a difference maker, someone that can control the middle of the field.
Yeah.
They need that. On the defensive side position group, that's still glaring to me. Now, I know they signed Dane Jackson from Buffalo, but to me, it's corner. I still think they needed that anyway because J.C. Horn is so freaking good, but
when
he can't
healthy.
See on the field.
Yeah, when he can't see on the field. Yeah.
Dane Jackson, who's going to be filling in for Dante Jackson, who got traded as part of the Deontay Johnson trade. Keep up with me here. But Dane Jackson might be a good spot starter to fill in, but you can't trust J.C. Horn staying healthy.
No.
Dane Jackson is like an average stopgap corner. You still need position. You still need to fill and upgrade that position, in my mind.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's a young guy that you're developing or a guy that maybe you can step in and play right away, or at least is capable of doing it if J.C. Horn is not healthy and ready to go.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers exposed that like 2 years ago. So.
Oh, yeah. Like, C.J. Henderson obviously is not the guy.
Yeah.
But I like that they re-signed Troy Hill. I actually thought he did pretty good as a nickel corner last season, especially late in the season. Really like what Troy Hill did. But to me, those are the big positions that are still needed to be addressed. And again, you might not be able to address it this offseason. Simple as that.
Okay. Just chip away.
Chip away.
Mm-hmm.
Chip away. Address one thing. Then move on to the next. I still think there's a long-term need for edge rusher. Like, Jadeveon Clowney and DJ Wonnum. Like, those guys, I'm like, you know what? If they were opposite of Brian Burns, I'd be like, yeah!
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the Brian Burns.
We don't. That's the problem.
But again, overall this offseason, I give it a B+ right now for the Carolina Panthers. It's been good. Still a lot of things to fill, and the draft is going to be vital because Dan Morgan's been part of the drafts over the last few years for the Carolina Panthers. He has been. You just look back to 2022. There are only three guys on the roster just last season from the 2022 draft class. It's Ikem Ekwonu at left tackle. Cade Mays is an interior offensive lineman who was not effective last year. And Amari Barno, who's awesome at special teams, who they drafted in the sixth round. That was it from your 2022 draft class.
Yeah.
You got to hit. you got to hit on this year's draft class. Otherwise, we're going to just have more of the same.